tuned in to WNUR, The Scope Radio, with your hosts, T. Strove, DJ Deluge, and Wes Restless. 89.3 FM, Chicago.
Scope Radio. We're back here and have Deluge on the line, if you're there. And
I'm here.
Great. And we actually are doing back-to-back interviews with two very progressive political figures, I should say. And I couldn't ask for better timing to have such progressive people on the show here with everything that's going on. So we want to welcome Ilya Shaman to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us, and want to just announce, you know, off the bat that you're running for the 10th Congressional District, which, for those who are not aware, if you could kind of give the boundaries of that district and also sort of the makeup of the district.
Absolutely. It's a little bit north and northwestern. It actually starts north of Winnetka and goes all the way up to the Wisconsin border along the lake and then west into Lake County. So this is one of the most economically diverse districts in the whole nation, having some of the wealthiest communities in the country on the North Shore, and then places like Waukegan, North Chicago, Round Lake, suffering through, you know, anywhere from 12 to 18% unemployment. It's an incredibly diverse place, and it's a place that has been Republican held 32 years, but now presents an opportunity for a progressive Democrat to pick up the seat.
And this is a recently redrawn district, correct? Just this next year is the first time it'll be in effect, right?
That's right. We saw some changes. It now goes all the way up to the Wisconsin border and includes some of the western suburbs all the way to the McHenry County border, like Grays Lake, Gurnee, Fox Lake, and other outlying suburbs.
Okay, great. And I believe you have a map on your website, right, showing the boundaries there.
We do at the shamanforcongress.com.
Great, and I want to talk about your background because it's very intriguing. You actually came here as a first-generation immigrant. If you can give a little bit of story on your, you know, how you came here and also how you got involved with politics, because I know it was very young.
Absolutely. So my family actually came over 20 years ago as Jewish refugees from Moscow and followed, I think, a very typical path for so many immigrants in our area. They worked hard, they imagined a better life for the next generation, and over time worked their way up from cramped motel room. We started out in Chicago, Skokie, and out to Buffalo Grove, which is where I grew up. And I think the path that took me here to where I am today is that I saw that through hard work and support from your community and government, you could really live out that quintessentially American dream. And so when I got out of college, I went right to work from Evanston to the Wisconsin border, working to fix a broken school funding system that, for those of you who have followed school funding in Illinois, just leaves too many kids behind. Some of the best public high schools in the country are located in this district, schools like Stevenson High School, where I had the good fortune of attending. Mm-hmm. And then just 10 or 15 or 20 miles away, you have schools that desperately need more resources and support to provide that same caliber of education for the kids who go there. So being able to see that disparity firsthand where I grew up just drove me to become a community organizer and work for concrete improvements in people's lives.
And you started kind of organizing in high school, right, at Stevenson with the protesting the war?
I did. I mean, you saw in 2002, if you think back, you saw the Bush administration relentlessly leading this country towards a war of choice in Iraq. You saw the Republican leadership lining up lockstep behind them. And the truth is, you saw far too many Democrats going along with the plan. And so it took ordinary folks in communities all across the country. Communities like Buffalo Grove, where probably two-thirds of the population supported the war, going out started to organize. And so I got together with a couple of fellow students, and ultimately we had over 1,000 students at our high school come out to a teach-in to learn more about the war and find out why it was such a big mistake. And that kind of experience is just tremendously empowering, seeing that one voice, when applied strategically and towards a cause that actually folks believe in, can mobilize a whole ton of other people to get involved, get engaged, and stand up in the fight for justice.
Right, and also early on, you were a member of a union, right? One of your first jobs was part of a union, correct?
You know, I got started like so many people do. I was 15, went to work at the local Jewel Osco in Buffalo Grove, and I got to be a UFCW member for 3 years. And there's just this feeling you get when you get that first union ballot for a contract, and you recognize that every single member of a union has the same rights as every other, to bargain for fair wages and decent working conditions. And, you know, right now when you look around the country and you see the attack on working people, you got to think back to the core value at stake, whether workers can come together and collectively bargain for good wages, for good working conditions, and for the ability to provide a good life for themselves and for their kids.
Right. And from high school, you went to a couple different grassroots positions, right? Kind of organizing at Democracy for America, at MoveOn.org.
Yes, I spent about a year as the national field director at Democracy for America, the group founded by Governor Howard Dean, working to build up and train progressive activists all around the country. And then most recently, I spent the past year and a half before running as the national mobilization director at MoveOn.org, figuring out how you mobilize 5 million Americans from all walks of life to fight for real, quality, affordable health care. And so you get the sense that there are people all across this country hungry for change, hungry for a politics that actually works to improve their own lives, and you have to figure out how to channel their voices into making the legislative process actually work for them.
Right, and you mentioned Howard Dean, and I know you've, I believe that him and Paul Wellstone and Russ Feingold are people that influence you. If you can speak on them, and also as a second question, they're considered more progressive political figures. And just for the people that might not be familiar with that term, if you could define progressive for our listeners here on campus.
Sure, and I actually think the two questions go hand in hand. You know, Senator Paul Wellstone, late senator from Minnesota, started out as a community organizer. And the reason I look to him for such guidance is he had this simple saying he would say everywhere he went, that politics can be about more than just money and power games. It can be about the improvement of people's lives. And I think that's the core of what progressive ideas are about, that we measure our success as a society and the success of our elected officials and our government by whether it actually delivers concrete improvements in the lives of ordinary people. And I think that has to be our North Star in every single thing we do, that when we get a piece of legislation, when we get something to organize around, we have to ask ourselves, will this make a concrete, tangible improvement in the lives of everyday Americans? And then the second piece of that, and I think Governor Dean is an important person in my life as well, is, you know, he came out in 2004 and ran for president on a very simple idea, that the power to change this country doesn't rest in Washington, D.C., that it rests with ordinary folks in their own communities who want to see a change. And I think what we're seeing all around the country right now is a recognition by more and more people that the change we seek isn't going to come from the people who are currently in charge. It's going to come from real grassroots organizing. It's going to come from people who are outraged at the economic injustice they're seeing, more and more jobs being shipped overseas, with the middle class being squeezed, and who are getting ready to organize around it and mobilize their communities for real substantive change.
Right. Now, I think that's a good point, and also a good topic to bring up as far as the what's going on now with the protests, Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Chicago. And I want to bring in my co-host, Deluge, here, if you can hear us, Deluge.
Hey, Ilya, how are you?
Hey, good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too. You too. We appreciate you joining us here. You know, in terms of Occupy Wall Street movement, and I've always been real big on protesting, as similar to you as I was in 2003 and 2002 before the war started, protesting the Iraq war and knowing that it was not only illegal, but it was unjust and wrong and wouldn't really solve any of our problems. Part of the issue, I think, right now with being so early on in this movement is that there isn't one clear issue that is being pressed upon within the Occupy Wall Street movement. And I think it's a lot of things. I think people feel enraged about a lot in terms of, you know, what's happening to our jobs over being pushed overseas, what's been happening. I asked Miguel de Valle the same question. What do you think was the official catalyst for making this, for really propelling this movement?
You know, it's a great question, and I don't want in any sense speak for the folks who are out there in the streets of Chicago. I think they
sure
have a clear message that they're delivering themselves. But what I will say is this. I think for the past 3 years, we have seen the American dream in a very real sense slipping away for families all across our community. And there's a growing sense of outrage felt by people all across the country, all across my district, and that I feel too, that Washington fundamentally isn't working for everyday Americans. And I think the catalyst now is there's a sense that there has been zero accountability for the folks on Wall Street whose greed, frankly, got us into this mess in the first place. The reality is that over the past 3 years and over the past 10 years before that, we saw taxes decreased for the wealthiest Americans who didn't need those tax cuts, weren't even asking for them. You saw two wars that weren't paid for. And then you saw reckless speculation and greed on Wall Street. And I think there's a growing sense amongst everyday Americans that no one's been held accountable for taking down the economy and that the middle class is left holding the bill. And people who can't get a job, who can't afford their home mortgage anymore at a time when one in four homes are underwater, the people who can't afford their college tuition or if they can come out and realize they can no longer get a job, they're feeling frustrated. And some of them are taking to the streets in Chicago. Some are doing grassroots organizing. And some are finding whatever vehicle they can to express the need to have an economy that actually works for the other 99% of us who aren't making millions and billions of dollars every single year.
Sure, sure. And what would be your objectives should you become the official representative of the 10th District? What would be some of your objectives to change this pervasive, economic disaster that's occurring on the middle and lower class in this country?
I think this campaign and the next few years are all about how we rebuild this economy and make it work for everyday Americans. So that starts with passing new jobs legislation to put millions of people back to work. Your congresswoman down in Evanston, Jan Schakowsky, has introduced an emergency jobs bill that would immediately put over 2 million people to work. I think that's a great step. That's exactly the kind of bold leadership we're looking for. I think the second thing we have to do is focus on bringing some fairness back to our tax system. The reality is we need to roll back the Bush tax cuts that favored the wealthiest 2% of Americans. So we can start doing the third piece, which is we have to invest in this country again. You know, I talked about getting my start working on education in this district. The reality is we can build a new clean energy economy from the ground up right now. We can bring back manufacturing. We can actually invest in broadband all across this country. We can build roads and bridges, invest in schools and universities. We can do all these things, but we have to make some decisions. We have to decide to roll back the Bush tax cuts on the wealthiest Americans. We have to stop spending $2 and $3 billion a week overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan. We have to just start thinking about how we rebuild this country here at home.
Well, I completely agree. You know, I think I speak for Tistro as well that we both agree with that. The issue, I think, in Congress right now with the hostility and the overwhelming attempt to hijack the American, political system by the Republicans, saying no to everything, turning down everything, saying everything is a stimulus plan, and if you're taxing the rich, it's called class warfare. This is probably the most hostile Congress anybody has ever seen in these Republicans here. They have stuck to their guns from day one. When Obama became president, they said, and I forgot who it was, it could have been Mitch McConnell that said, you know, we're just going to say no. I mean, we want this guy out of here after this term, not the next term. We're just going to say no to everything he does and proposes and says. How do you retaliate against that? What are you going to do as one of our leaders in the House of Representatives to attack that?
Look, I think this is a critical piece of the puzzle. You have mm-hmm. the Republican Party saying no to everything, and when they say yes to something, it's regressive measures that try to undermine Medicare, undermine Social Security, and take us backwards to the previous century. So here's what I think we have to do. I think we have to tell the American people what the Republican Party has done, but that we have to do more than that. We have to spend the next 13 months laying out what we intend to do in Congress, running on a bold agenda like the one I talked about, of putting people to work, yes, using federal money, of rolling back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans and doing real investments. We have to campaign on that all across this district and all across the country so that when we get into office, we have a clear mandate to govern. You know, I think for far too long, you've seen too many politicians try to just play the polls, try to figure out what's the least they can possibly say to get elected. And I think our goal has to be about more than just winning one election. We have to win this election in the 10th district. We have to take back the House for Democrats. But we also have to build on what started in Madison, Wisconsin, and actually build a real movement to rebuild the middle class in this country. And that'll require us to take bold stands right now, campaign on them, so we're actually positioned to govern that way. And if Republicans want to stand in the way, and they did today in the U.S. Senate,
which they will,
and they did today, they tried, mm-hmm. they voted down the president's jobs bill in the Senate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when we see that, we have to call them out on it, and we have to hold them accountable. The voters have to know that the Republicans who ran on jobs last cycle have pursued a very different agenda. But I think to be bold.
Yes, and I agree. You know, the issue, I think, aside from that, and I agree with everything you said, and I appreciate your candidness, how do you invade the media? How do you, you know, aside from Scope Radio and on WNUR, how do you invade ABC and NBC and CNN, and how do you get the message out to as many people as you possibly can to say, hey, I mean, this is what these guys are doing, this is what we're planning on doing, this is what they're blocking every single time we are planning on doing this. You know, how do you get that out there in a clear, concise way so that the American people will start listening and understand, aside from the people on Wall Street, the people that are occupying Wall Street, the people that aren't, the people that are on the fence, how do you get those people to understand what it is that we need to, that you want to change?
Well, I think the truth is the American people are far ahead of members of Congress from either party in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. You have 70-80% of Americans supporting protecting Social Security and Medicare, supporting rolling back the Bush tax cuts on millionaires and billionaires. You have the American people leading and Washington not responding to that. So,
yes.
You know, as somebody who comes out of this as a community organizer, I'm a big believer in empowerment politics. I don't think our job is to invade the media, although that's certainly a piece of it. I think our job is to go voter to voter, neighbor to neighbor, door to door, and have these conversations on the grassroots level. Because at the end of the day, the only thing that can beat the fancy TV ads, the big money in our politics, is real one-to-one conversations. And if we have enough of those with people we trust in our own communities, we can not only withstand the barrage from the right wing, but we can actually have a mandate for real change. So I think it has to start from the grassroots at the bottom and work its way up to Washington.
And one thing I want to mention I've been happy to see in researching the show here is you're not shy about criticizing Democrats either that aren't, you know, fulfilling their, you know, campaign promises or necessarily the liberal agenda. If you can speak on your views on Democrats that are also guilty of not moving things forward.
Sure. And I think, look, this isn't about being liberal or conservative. It's about a conviction-based politics that actually speaks to the values of everyday people in our communities, people who are struggling every single day to get a job or send their kid to college or afford the cost of health care or their home mortgage. And so I think our job has to be honest about what's going on in Washington. When I worked at MoveOn on health care reform, part of my job was making sure Republicans didn't kill health care reform. Part of my job was also making sure that Democrats lived up to their promises, that those who said they would fight for a public option actually went out there and fought for a public option. I think what voters expect is that we go out there every single day and fight for them, fight for the values that they hold dear, regardless of which party is in power. And that means that occasionally, if our party has an idea that's wrong, we have to call them out on it. And the flip side is also true. If the Republican Party has a good idea, it's pretty rare nowadays, but it does happen, we should come on board and support it. That's the least we can do for voters who are sick and tired of Washington just bickering instead of helping improve their lives.
Well, that's the funny thing, you know, about this jobs bill that was just killed by the Republicans, $447 billion job bill from that Obama proposed was partially their own plan that they killed.
It's mostly Republican ideas.
It's an unbelievable game that is going on in Congress right now, and it's such, like I said, it's such a hostile territory at this point in time that you guys are going to have to deal with at some point. But I totally agree with your grassroots approach to, you know, talking to people and getting people to understand the message within the communities. And you know, I think that's worked very well for people like Dennis Kucinich, who's been in there for 20 years or so in Ohio. It's worked great for Jan Schakowsky here in Evanston.
Obama.
It worked damn well for Obama too, sure. And I think that is an excellent way of getting to know people, getting to reach out to people, getting votes especially, and you know, staying in there as well, you know, becoming a name and a face and a message. And I think that's great to hear.
Absolutely. Look, at the end of the day, empowerment politics works only if we go out and empower the community, if we reach out to them, have genuine conversations, hear the stories of thousands of voters, as we've been doing as we go door to door, and give them a sense that this campaign can be a vehicle for their own hopes and their own dreams. And so we've been out knocking on doors since June of this year, 9 months before the election, because it's absolutely critical we engage people, and we can certainly use more help. We need more people out there every weekend, knocking on doors, making phone calls, reaching out to their friends and family in the 10th district, and letting them know that there is something happening in this district. We are out to prove that when Democrats stand up and fight for working families, we win. And I think we can, if we do that right in the 10th district, we can send a message to the Democratic Party from coast to coast that this is not just the pathway to winning elections, it's also a pathway to achieving the change we want to see in Washington.
And this seat in particular has been targeted by the DCCC, right, as a very important race in the next election, correct?
This is now the number one most Democratic seat in the whole entire country that's held by a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So any path to Democrats taking back the House goes through this district.
Right.
But it's not going to happen by default. It'll only happen if we out-organize the other side and if we're willing to stand up and fight for our values.
And it's been great to see Howard Dean endorse your campaign. Democracy for America endorsed it. How can people read up on you and your campaign and get involved if they want to help knock on doors or, donate?
The best way to do it is to go online to shamanforcongress.com. That's S-H-E-Y-M-A-N, forcongress.com. There's a link to intern. There's a link to volunteer. There's a link to contribute. And the truth is, whether you've got 2 hours between now and next November, or if you have 10 hours a week, we can plug you in and give you an exciting way to engage in this campaign. In one of the most exciting races in the whole country, you can get in very early on, talk to voters, and get a sense of how you build a grassroots movement from the bottom up. So we can certainly use the help. There's all sorts of opportunities for people to plug in either close to Evanston or if you're willing to travel all the way up to Waukegan on the Wisconsin border.
Great. Well, that sounds excellent. We really appreciate you calling this late, and we'll let you go here. But we hope to have you on, you know, before the election to discuss how things are going, if you don't mind.
I would love to be back. It's been my pleasure.
Okay, great. Definitely. Appreciate it. All thanks again.
Too. Thanks so much.
Alrighty.
Take care.
Alrighty.
All right.
We are on the 11 o'clock hour here at Scope Radio, and really appreciate both Miguel De Valle and Ilya Shaman calling in. You can go to.
I really like what Ilya had to say. I mean, I think, you know, he answered some tough questions really, really thoroughly and candidly. And, you know, Tistro, these days, you know, with, you know, politicians saying whatever they can to get elected, I think this guy, Ilya, has a good idea of what he wants to do grassroots-wise, and I think that he's right. That's going to be a very important thing to do instead of establishing relationships with the media, establishing relationships within his own community and the area which he represents. So, and, I mean, I think that's definitely a good thing.
And those interested, you know, that have been motivated by the Occupy movement should really take a look at this race because it's very close. It's, you know, just north of us here. It's a great candidate. It's the most important, like he said, race for the House where a Democrat can pick up a red seat. So
yeah, you'll be hearing a lot about this guy come election time, Ilya Shaman. He'll be in the news for sure. So
right. Well, check out scoperadio.com for more information on both candidates. And we're going to get back to the music here.